I've been eating McDonald's every day this week, collecting Monopoly peelies.
And ammonia?
I have actually won more in free food than I have spent. I have won 2 small frappes, a breakfast sandwich, a quarter pounder, and enough free medium fries to feed a third world nation.
Frappes is a terrible name for anything.
Sounds like the noise. Sounds like the
I'm gonna go to McDonald's and get a frappe.
It's like the onomatopoeia for a fart noise.
No, it's an onomatopoeia for a fart noise while you're masturbating. I totally just frappéed all over the place.
Edition of Damn Art Majors. I am Adam Buccafusco. Joined with me today is Dudders.
Hello.
Aaron.
Hi.
And we have a special guest. Would you like to introduce him, Aaron?
This has been a hard man to get a hold of. with us today is a fellow ECU alum, Brandon Cordry.
Hello.
Hey, Brandon. How's it going?
Going pretty well.
Was it really that hard to get a hold of you?
It's been like 6 months.
He's got things he's doing. He's a working artist. He's out there doing his craft.
So what is this, like episode 31?
Two.
32?
Two, yeah.
I don't think it was far into the project before you asked me.
I think I asked you probably at episode 4 or 5.
Well, better late than never.
So that's only 28 weeks?
Yeah.
Yeah. He was busy. Everybody's busy.
You get some experience under your belt.
This is true.
Well, we're going to start this show the way we start every show with everybody's favorite segment. What you drinking? Dudders, what you got?
I have Sierra Nevada's Vienna style lager. It's the finest quality, the purest ingredients.
Yep. I am going to continue the Sierra Nevada taste here with Flipside, the seasonal red IPA. I'm finding that fall IPAs are a thing. They're not just a summer brew, and I'm kind of for it, man. I kind of dig it. Aaron, you got a oldie but a goodie.
You can say that.
I will. I just did.
I was going to say I'm rekindling a new low that I haven't experienced since probably 2009 when I didn't have money. I'm drinking a Miller High Life.
With coffee.
With coffee to make it taste better.
You get the uppers and the downers going.
Yep.
Good combo.
And so I'm not getting depressed while I'm drinking Miller High Life.
And Brandon, what'd you bring in for your first? What you drinking?
I brought Big Boss's Angry Angel, which is a Kolsch style ale. It's really easy to drink, very easy to get drunk on. And the guys at Big Boss are pretty awesome.
Yeah, they are. Local brewery, why not?
We did a whole Big Boss episode.
Yeah, we did.
Yeah.
We have been getting some listener feedback and some listener suggested topics, as we encourage all of you guys to submit to us. As always, you can do that through the Facebook, through the Twitter, through the Gmail. All the handles there are Damn Art Majors, or you could even go to damnartmajors.com and go to the contact page and submit something there. Why not? Aaron, what do we got this week?
We had a... You're talking about the quote, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Remember.
We had a quote from somebody that was, they proposed the question, it was a quote from Oscar Wilde, "True artist takes no notice whatsoever of the public. The public are to him non-existent." I interpret this as an artist, that was the end of the quote. The person that wrote in said, "I interpret it as an artist shouldn't let the opinions of the public affect the work that they put out." How true is this statement? And was it ever really true? Also, do you see this as having maybe another meaning?
Well, luckily, we have not just 3 self-proclaimed artists, but 4! And maybe a new...
More than just self-proclaimed, all right? Other people have proclaimed it, too.
I've called you many of things. Artist is one, yes, one title. So we got some fresh look, not just our interpretations of the quote.
Yeah.
None of which we're going to actually omit and vocalize. We're just going to move on right past this.
All right.
All right. That was the quote of the week.
Do you not want to touch on it at all?
No, I was kidding. I mean, that's a joke. No, I'm trying to pull you into the conversation.
Thanks, listeners, but we're going to ignore
you. Thanks for writing in.
Next time. Don't do it next time.
We don't listen to the public over here.
Think twice next time.
We're taking your advice. Shut the hell up. Go away. Turn us off. We're done.
So, Aaron, has there ever been a piece that you've worked on that based on, you presented it based on some viewer feedback, you've gone back to and altered?
I feel like we had this discussion on this very show at some point.
No, not exactly. This is a little bit different context.
Okay.
Yes, I have, but it was mostly because it was an academic piece and I didn't have a choice.
Sure.
Since college, when it wasn't detrimental to my grade to not fix a piece, I can't think that I have.
Okay.
I've done it for structural reasons. Like, I was afraid it would kill somebody. But no, I don't think I have. What about you guys?
Yeah, Brandon, what
do you think artists count as the public? Because if you think about critique sessions, I mean, we do those all the time.
Yeah, well, peers are...
That's more of an, like... I don't think they count as the public, because they're coming from a base of knowledge, like a peer review. Not a guy off the street review.
I personally feel like there's phases to a work's completion, and when you're halfway through or a quarter way through or even whatever percentage, if you have a moment where you open the floor to artists, to critics, to viewers to critique your art and then continue to work on it with those comments in mind, then those opinions become part of the work themselves and thus help you lead to the final product. So it's appropriate during the creation time, but when you have it finalized, then it's no longer appropriate to alter the work based on public opinion, regardless if they're an artist or even your professor or your mom. If you continue to alter that final piece, then it wasn't done. And that's just me speaking. I don't know how you guys feel.
Well, I mean, I'm not sure that's what... I know that's not really what Oscar Wilde was going for. He was... I'm trying to remember the name of the movement. The aestheticists or whatever. The movement of artists that were trying to get away from politically based art. They were trying to just focus on the aesthetics of the artwork.
Dadaism.
And now it's pre-Dada, because this is right before the turn of the century. Because he died in what?
Impressionist?
1890-something.
I'm not sure. I can't remember. That.
But he was a movement of artists, writers, thinkers, visual artists, poets, who were trying to get away from writing politically based works.
Mm-hmm.
Things where all they were doing was taking what was around them politically, culturally, and turning it around and giving it back to the public. And that was his whole thing until he died in prison. But was that moving away from bringing the public into your work as an influence. His work and other artists at the time, it was about creating work based in aesthetics, in purely in visuals. And
you're talking about aestheticism?
Thank you.
Okay.
Yes, aestheticism.
I find it hard to get, you know, you have a reception for an exhibition and the public comes, and I hate those settings.
Mm-hmm.
I was in one last night, and you know, your work is pretty personal, and then you put it out there and any Joe Schmo can walk in, which you want them to, supposedly, and say whatever they want about it. And I find it hard to sometimes get those thoughts out of my head. I have multiple.
They're all very, yes. Very well groomed.
Oh, well, thank you. This one over here needs a haircut. But I don't think that I consciously take what the public says in. I think there are still artists who do respond to what the public say, and I think that we can call them artists. True artists is some sort of cloud-based demon that we haven't really tamed yet. I don't know who the true artists are.
Well,
or that I've met one.
I think there's also
clearly Miley Cyrus gluing shit together when she's high is true art,
and she doesn't care what the public thinks.
Well, the person that wrote in also asked, "Has this always?"
Yeah, this guy's got a lot to say.
Yeah.
What does he want? What does he want from a free friggin' podcast?
Everything. He wants the world. Continue, Aaron.
He wanted to know if this has been the case for a long time.
Well, they actually asked if it was ever true, which made it sound as if he assumed that it never was.
Well, I mean, anyone making anything is going to bring, I mean, unless they have lived their entire life in a cave, they're going to bring something from the public into their own work. Whether it's after they've created the work, or it is before they've even started the work. The public culture around them is going to affect what they're doing. Unless they live in a cave. In that case, they're going to, you know...
Oh, I think it goes even beyond that, because if you were living in a cave, you would have cave art, and then, you know, you'd have your cave buddies come over, you look at your art, and, you know, stroke their big old beards while clubbing their wives, and go, I just don't know about this buffalo. I think it's poorly placed. I feel like he wants to be over here, a little more to the left.
He wants to be with the other buffalo.
Yep.
I think, there was, for several centuries, actually more than several centuries, artists, absolutely, they had no choice but to pander to the wishes and desires of their patrons. It was even more so a necessity of their livelihood that they do that than it is today. Like, if you're a freelance artist of any sort, I mean, you could still go and get a job. Back then, you were an artist for your life. Like, you would have no other trade. If you weren't an artist, you would be shoveling shit in a stall somewhere, possibly human. And I mean, that has dwindled down over the centuries.
They didn't have indoor plumbing, Adam.
Yeah. That has dwindled down over the centuries, especially when Oscar Wilde wrote this in like the 1890s. It was, the hell's the title of that thing? Something Socialism Under Man, or Man Under Socialism.
The Soul of Man Under Socialism.
1891. The Soul of Man Under Socialism.
I can remember that. I can remember that, but
I mean, I read that entire thing. And it was excellent. It was amazing to read. Because he was, you know, hitting on all sorts of points that are still problems today. But the biggest thing he was talking about was the concept of individualism. And I think that's what the person that wrote in was trying to get at. To narrow it down to just one word, it would be individualism. Like, has that existed throughout time?
Why are we all looking at me?
If you have a sound clip of crickets chirping, Richard was talking about earlier, the aesthetic movement, which got much larger in the 20s with Dadaism. They were branching away from any preconceptions of art. Individualism was like, you either had it or you weren't an artist at that point in time.
Honestly, I think it's the autonomous transitory universals, really.
What the fuck are you talking about? I think, so...
It's the ACU of the piece.
Today, it's all consumerist capitalism. That is the foundation of art these days. I mean, when you become a famous artist, immediately your artwork gets capitalized upon. Look at any artist. He has a mimic. He has t-shirts made out of his shit. He has toys made out of it. It becomes marketable. So,
sorry, I'm just thinking of my sculptures being like little rubber toys.
Yeah. Well, you worked for John Henry, the guy that makes, you know, like monumental size sculptures. Yeah. He, when he turned 70, probably decided to start making miniatures, like 7 to 8 inch,
mm-hmm.
perfect proportioned miniatures, and he sells them for hundreds of dollars.
Sure.
Why would he feel the need to make toys?
I think it's just another...
Oh, you, I mean, you know, you're turning yourself into a commodity.
Yeah, it's a branding thing, you know?
Yes, well, it's
beyond...
You know, capitalism. You're jumping on the market.
Exactly. Give the people
also,
what they
people,
want.
People, I mean, if you set up a gallery show and you have... couple hundred donors who helped you do that show, one thing you can do for those donors is give them a small piece of something to be like, thank you for helping with this. Here's a small piece. Here's a token of my gratitude. Right. People like physical things, like free shirts.
I agree. People like physical things. I've been trying to beat that one over the head for a long time. In this digital world where you spend real money on fake things, isn't it nice to actually have a tangible product? Sorry, I got a soapbox. That's a little...
Where'd you buy a soapbox?
Flea market.
Amazon.
iTunes.
It was a digital download. You just stand on your iPhone 6. It bends a little, but you'll be okay.
Yeah, I'll live.
You got anything you want to add to that?
Mm-hmm.
No. Okay. You're not even going to talk about it?
I'm really sorry.
We have another listener who wrote in who simply asked, Aaron, what is art? Let's go ahead and just feel that question.
All right, let's do it.
It's a 40-minute podcast. We could do this.
I have never told anybody my opinion of what I think art is.
Nobody actually wrote that.
I don't give a fuck. I'm going to give it anyway.
I want to hear what your opinion is on what art is.
I went all throughout college not answering this question.
You had to take a class where you answer that question.
I didn't answer it.
Then you failed the class.
What class?
Philosophy of art?
Thank you.
I didn't answer. I just wrote papers about what Plato would say to Tolstoy if they both lived in the same time era. I seriously never answered it.
I barely made it through that class with D.
Well,
so.
I took the class that was like philosophy of the philosophy of art.
Okay.
Like, we weren't having arguments in class and shit. This guy was, he just wanted you to recognize and read the shit. Not necessarily
want to. So do you have an answer?
I do. Art is whatever the fuck we want it to be. And that is my answer. Because it's applicable to any question. Is something art? Yes.
It is if you want it to be?
Yeah. Across the board.
Art.
That was art.
Yeah, it was. It's like angels singing that noise.
I'm not going to ask any of you guys what your
definition
is. Because it's not fair. If you're not prepared for it, artists get really pissed off.
Well, Aaron, months of coaxing Brandon to come on the show, do you not have a single question, not an inkling of what you want to discuss with him?
Brandon, what is art?
No,
tell us about yourself. How do you balance work and family?
Well, no, do tell us. Tell us about your work. Tell us about, you know, what got you, you know, tell us the origin story of Brandon.
Ooh, you would use the term Brandon origin story.
Yeah, of course.
What's your prequel?
I feel like everybody has that epic story that leads to them being an artist, but I grew up in Western North Carolina. I was good at art. I said I would go to college for art. My parents were like, great. I went to college for art. Then I had a moment where I was like, crap, I'm a middle-class white kid making art about nothing. And then I made a whole exhibit about it, and it was about nothing as well. And I shared a studio with Aaron. And then I graduated college. That really is all that's important up until that point. And then I learned a shit ton more since college than I did any time in college or before that. Some professors at ECU, I feel like, did a good job of preparing you for the job market. Others completely ignored it because they've never been outside of academia. I started working for a gallery right away after working for a museum in college. Volunteered at a couple museums. Then I left my job to work at a museum in the current nonprofit that I work for, which works with people with disabilities in the arts community. Then I started working at Flanders Gallery in downtown Raleigh, which is an amazing place, which I still love and am part of the family of, but don't necessarily work there on a regular schedule. Worked at CAM Raleigh for a little while. And then I started working at Visual Art Exchange in downtown Raleigh. And that's probably where I've learned the most about what being an artist can entail. Not what it means, but like the wide range of what that can mean.
The VAE.
The VAE, okay. Which is not the VAE. You'll get yelled at if you say that. It's just VAE.
I'm going to call it the VAE. I've been yelled at.
Don't worry.
I'm going to get yelled at by a nonprofit.
It's fun. I work with fun people. Them yelling at you is pretty fun. Last year we did 113 exhibitions.
Oh, wow.
And that's why when you say what's art and you say it's whatever the fuck you want it to be, I have to wholeheartedly agree because I've seen many variations. So outside of my two main jobs, I teach at Pullen Art Center, which is really fun because I see another wide variety of artwork. And I say things all the time to my students that I'm like, why don't I do that in my studio? I should think about that. So it just reaffirms things that I should tell myself.
So who's teaching whom?
You never know. And then I have a studio. Which I share with a fabulous artist, Rachel Herrick, who, shout out to Rachel Herrick, because I know she'll listen to this, has a fake science museum that is currently traveling the world. And her sort of idea of art, one that she shared that I thought was kind of amazing, is like, she will make something and say it is old and put it on a pedestal and you will be forced to believe that it is an artifact.
I call that the flea market experience.
And so in my studio, I make things. They vary, but it's mostly mixed media collage with painting and drawing and exhibit it from time to time. It's kind of a boring story. Sorry.
So you kind of went more, in some ways, a more traditional route with your degree by working in the galleries and ultimately teaching and doing your own stuff. Do you feel that that's the correct path for you? Would you like to, you know, venture into more of like a communication arts, maybe have like a more, I don't know, just are you happy with the path you're on at this point and want to further that? And if so, where's it going? Or would you like to try other things?
I feel like I've tried quite a few things at this point. And my current job encompasses more things than, and by current job, I guess I mainly mean visual art exchange. I do some communications and marketing that involves my artistic senses. I did air quotes. You can't see that. I get to...
This is the number one hand gesture in podcasting is finger quotes that nobody can see.
I think mine is just a general...
Oh, people can hear the wind whooshing with ears.
The sound of me moving my hands around.
But I think when I was actually at ECU, I was working in the Greenville Museum of Art, and Chris, who was the preparator there, said that he didn't really paint anymore, that exhibitions was kind of his art now. I think that kind of stuck with me. I really like exhibitions. I like setting them up. I like sort of thinking about how people view art and how they move through a space, mm-hmm. And how best to complement pieces of art by installing them. I like marketing calls to arts. I was actually just talking to some NC State students about marketing yesterday, and marketing to artists is like, put a fun image in front of them and then write whatever you want because they won't read it anyway.
Right.
Or put a video up and they'll like, it doesn't matter if it's of your cat doing nothing, they'll still watch it. But no, I really like exhibitions. Working for the nonprofit of Arts Access is really fulfilling. I was looking for something that had art, but also sort of had a humanity side of it. So it's been fun. I don't know. I'm not making any big life changes right now, so I guess I don't. I could if I wanted to, I guess.
Right. Very cool. See? Nice. Catchphrase.
Nice. I'm going to get that on a shirt.
Very cool. That'd be a cool shirt to have.
So I have a follow-up question. You said
talking about myself, by the way.
He has a pretty well, this is
the perfect place to do it though.
Great. I promise it won't hurt.
Look, these people have listened to us like rant for 31 episodes.
You said you went a pretty traditional route after mm-hmm. college. I don't think it's pretty traditional. I mean it's supposed to be.
Are you
people don't do it.
Are you going on air saying that you're, in fact, disagreeing with me on something?
For those of you that didn't see, Aaron just made a Shakespearean gesture towards Adam.
No, yeah. He would have bitten his thumb at me.
This is like the lighthearted version of it.
He made a reference to a Shakespearean gesture towards Adam.
So, yes, it is a traditional route, but I don't think a lot of people cater to it these days.
No, absolutely. I wholeheartedly agree with that.
Almost to the point where it might be impractical for them to do so.
And when I say traditional, I mean like traditional in the way of fine arts. I don't mean traditional as in conventional. It's by no means conventional.
Because there's no jobs out there still.
Well, and quote unquote. But it's really awesome that he's been able to, you know, take something and really grab the ball and just run with it. And, you know, where a lot of people sit there and say there's no money or there's no career in art, you seem to be doing exactly that. You're taking what you love and making, you know, a life for yourself with it. So that's very commendable.
So one day at the gym, a woman was, I was wearing an ECU shirt, and mm-hmm. she said that she went to ECU and she got her master's in English, and she was like, oh, it's totally useless. And then she asked me what I got my degree in, and I said art. And then she's like, why are you judging me? Like, you got a degree in art. What can you do with that? And I was like, A, I was not judging you. I didn't say anything. And B, I at one point had 5 jobs. So,
right.
Snip, clearly snap, there's bitch. Something.
I think that there's this conception, or misconception, some of the times about artists that we're just like unorganized or sort of aloof.
We're just living in the ether. Like,
right. And that any moment, like an artistic happening might just take over your body and you might have to just run out of work, so you're unreliable. But I think there are people in all sorts of fields that are, there's a wide range of people in all sorts of fields. So just because you have an art degree doesn't mean you can't hold down a 9-to-5.
Right.
I think
it's just those people can't hold down, like those particular people,
right,
that can't hold down the 9-to-5,
or, and they got an art degree,
and it just so happened they got an art degree. It's not the art degree made them that way. They were that way to begin with. If they had gone in to become a doctor, they probably would run out of a surgery halfway through and just go all fanciful riding a unicorn into the sunset.
I do have to chase down a lot of artists for our exhibitions and our programs. And so I think that I have to keep a meticulous calendar that I screw up all the time. And I'm not perfect in any way, but I can hold some sort of structure so that I have to hold them to it in some way. So I think if you are sort of more aloof and artistic and maybe less organized, that wouldn't be the route you'd want to take.
I feel like a lot of artists I know are some of the hardest working people I know.
Mm-hmm. They can be. You're generalizing a little bit, but I...
Most of the people I know who, in one way or another, work in the arts or work on their own art, work very hard.
Mm-hmm.
And probably the reason I don't know a lot that aren't like that is because they would just annoy me, so I would stop being their friend.
Well, and I think you do, you personally, well, I think all of us kind of... You float with people you have similarities to. So if you have a strong work ethic, you're going to surround yourself with people who also have strong work ethics.
And art school wasn't really built for the person who doesn't have a strong work ethic.
Right.
I mean, they sometimes get through, but they also drop out pretty often.
I wish I'd kept the statistic that I found one time that is the amount of hours that are put in by college students, like practical hours. And we were right neck and neck with pre-med.
Yeah, we have the advantage of not dealing with people's... Generally, people's lives are not in the balance when we don't spend all night doing our all-nighter and everything, because we're never going to be in the middle of a surgery going, now does this artery connect to this artery?
How did that...
If only I... Nurse! Nurse! What? Is it the blue to the red? Which do I cut?
They're all red and blue. What I was going to say earlier, though, was trying to tie into something. You have the most practical experience outside of college of any artist that I know of, from ECU. And I was going to ask you, like, do you have advice that you commonly give to other artists who are like, dude, how do I find a job? How do you have 5 jobs and juggle them at the same time? What amount of that was legwork, and what amount of it was actually showing up to events and just discussing with people. You know, did you force yourself to get out of bed in the morning and say, I'm going to go to this place and not leave until I've talked to somebody? You know.
So the advice I most commonly give, and I think because Raleigh is ending up on all of those, you know, top 10 lists, more people are moving here. They're like, I'm new to town, and they come to a reception. They're like, you know, how can I get a job in the arts around here? And I'm like, you've got to start you're doing well, you're here, but then you've got to start volunteering. I mean, arts organizations rely on volunteers all the time, and they're never going to find an arts organization that has a job open that they don't already know somebody who might want it. So you're not going to be the new kid in town and hand your resume over. It's a piece of paper. And there'll be five people before you who put in hours without pay because they wanted to work somewhere. I offered to change my name to Sarah to work at Visual Art Exchange because there were three Sarahs there at the time. I hounded them for all intents and purposes. And then I, for some reason, was offered a contract position for SparkCon, which happened a couple weeks ago. Which next year y'all should podcast from SparkCon.
We attended. Well, I attended.
We should make that happen. but I was a contract worker, and then after that, the exhibitions manager was basically leaving. And because I did a good job at that contract position, I was interviewed and hired for the other position. So I wasn't afraid to go to places, talk to people. I hounded Kelly McChesney at Flanders multiple times to hire me. Part of that was because I hated my current job at the gallery that I worked at. And he's probably never heard a podcast in his entire life, so he won't know what this is. And so I really wanted to get out of that. And then I just stopped saying no. People were like, do you want to do this? Yes. Can you do that? Yes. Beth Blake at ECU used to say, if you're in an interview and someone asks you if you can do something, just say yes. You can go home and figure out how to do it.
Thank God for Google.
Right. And so I ended up actually taking on too much. And at the point where I felt like I couldn't do all of the jobs to like the level of work I wanted to be producing, I ended up readjusting and taking on less jobs. But I think you have to be reliable. You have to get your name out there. You have to go to events. I remember Sarah Powers at the end of a conference that we did at VAE. She was like, go to each other's shit. If we don't go to it, who's going to go?
Right.
You got to show up to people's things. And that was mainly like support other artists. But I think that's the best way to go. Pour wine, hand out beer, whatever. I think that goes for most
people.
Jobs.
See a line, they'll get in line.
Yeah.
What are you guys?
Look at the food truck rally.
What are you guys standing around for?
we're here to see this art. Really? Really? I need to be. You need to be here. So it's like hiring. I think it's the very first episode of It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia. The guys are trying to make the bar popular. They hire a guy to make the bar popular. And what he does is he hires a bunch of people to stand in line outside of the bar. And they're like, dude, we need to let the people... No. They're just here to make us look like there's a line. Like, you just need these guys here.
To never underestimate the power of nepotism. It works out in artists' favor very, very well most of the time. I mean, we often pat each other on the back, you know, reciprocate favors.
Well, I find that a lot of art jobs are trying to land a creative... job is very similar to that of an actor or musician trying to get work in Hollywood or on Broadway. You know, I remember when I was starting out after college with animation, I used to joke and say, well, I almost did it. I would say that I would make demo reels, put them on DVDs and leave them at coffee shops and hope that, you know, somebody would notice them, pick it up and watch it.
That's a nice coaster.
It's not. Yeah, exactly.
It's the shiniest coaster I've ever seen.
It's not too far off from that. I mean, I think a lot of professions, even outside of art, are really about who you know and also what you can do. I like what Brandon said about, you know, say yes and just figure it out later if need be. It's really just about getting your foot in the door. most of the time. And personality goes a long way. You know, if there was something like we talked about, like maybe like one day doing a pod from some kind of lecture or whatever. But if there was a piece of advice I could give people in art right now, it's don't be a dick. Don't be a dick to like anyone. Because guess what? When you're in a community such as the arts and, you know, you're in class and you're surrounded by your classmates, and if you're that person, well, maybe that classmate will be that person who's reading your resume. That happened to us at work. We got a resume, and one of my coworkers picked up that resume, looked at it, and went, oh, no. I know that person, and they're a dick. Didn't even call them in. I mean, it's literally, it can be like that. I mean, just because you think you're safe in the in the 4 years of further education, that you're free from a reputation outside of that university, think again, man. So yeah, you know, befriend as many people as you can, and you know, don't piss anybody off, like, intentionally.
Yeah, I tell a lot of artists that, like, we may not necessarily remember that you did something right, but we'll remember if you really fucked it up.
Yeah.
and we'll hold a grudge. Secretly. But we will.
Yeah, I don't know how many times I've been talking to fellow artists at an event where I don't know most of the people there. Get into a conversation with somebody. I say, yeah, I did this with this and this. And they say, oh, do you know this guy? And I was like, no, but I know this person. And they're like, oh, that guy fucking sucks. Like, I don't know how many times that happened.
Artists are pretty vocal.
Yeah. And then they give you an exact context of why he sucks.
Yeah. We remember and we're vocal. We're kind of the worst.
But well, the best at the same time.
At the same time, yeah. You're right.
Well, Brandon, on this show, we like to play little games or do little segments and as many episodes as we can squeeze them in. And I just so happen to bring one. If you guys like, we could do an artthetical to round this episode out.
I could hypothetically get behind that.
Okay. Well, this one comes from, once again, Chuck Klosterman's Hypertheticals, 50 Questions for the Insane Conversations.
Insane.
Insane conversation. I altered it a bit so that it would suit the needs for an artthetical opposed to a hypothetical. So here we go. All right. You are forced to give up one of your five senses: smell, sight, taste, touch, or hearing. However, you may choose to compensate for the loss by means of synesthesia. Did I get it? No, I practiced that word.
It's synesthesia.
Synesthesia. I practice, guys.
It's the first time you've said it right. Congratulations.
Yay, synesthesia. For example, if you decide to give up your sense of sight, you can choose to smell colors instead. If you give up your hearing, you might opt to taste music. If you give up taste, you could replace it with the sensation of feeling flavors. Basically, whatever sense you reject, you would be reflected through an alternative medium. Which of these senses would you surrender, and how would you replace it? I want to add to that, would you consider changing your profession if you could make such a change? So, Brandon, being the guest...
No, that is so not fair.
All right. Save you for last. Dutters, you got this one?
I would not change my profession.
Well, you got to first say the thing, and then that's right. The final question.
Okay. For the first question, I'd give up smell, because I don't know how many times I've been grinding things. I mean, like, this smells terrible, and I wish I didn't have to smell this. Or pretty much doing anything related to sculpture with chemicals and stuff. To avoid the smelling of those things would be great. And then I get a sense on...
Well, how would you take in scents? Yeah.
With my tongue when I ate things.
Nice.
So that way I've pretty much eliminated the need for a nose altogether.
But now you have an acute sense of taste. You could be a food critic. You could be a chef.
I'll still just make stuff. No food critic stuff. No. All
right.
But now as far as career thing, yeah, definitely sticking with what I do now. Maybe even more... Maybe even less commercial and even more just personal.
Aaron?
I would give up smell as well, because smelling is tasting. Whenever you inhale, you're actually running air over your taste buds, and taste is smelling. Just like snakes. But, what was the second part of that question? I keep forgetting.
You would then have to take in scents, because you gave up smell, in another fashion.
You said...
I will hear the smells.
You could hear smells.
Know that they sound disgusting.
I really don't like the way that your food smells.
You could see smells.
I taste colors?
Well, no, because then you'd have to give up sight.
Okay, I could smell colors.
You could smell colors.
Okay.
Just like those markers.
You just gave up smell.
But you gave up smell. So you haven't been...
What do I have like, to...
I'm
lost as to what I have to exchange for the
smell. You can taste color.
Okay, so I gave up smelling. What do
so
I have
now,
to...
in order to take smells in...
To take
you feel in. You feel smells. You feel them. You touch things and you're like, this smells amazing.
I'm going to say sea smells, because I would not quit my career as an illustrator. I would instead become a food illustrator.
There you go. So you would take it and apply your new sense to your mm-hmm. your trade.
Yep, and that would be unstoppable.
There you go. All right, Brandon, now that Aaron needed the over-explanation.
I would lick your drawings. I would lick them, because I now have super tongue.
There you
we
go.
We could just feed each other and be like...
I mean, I hate to be boring, but immediately I was like, I would give up smell.
Yeah.
Similar reasons as Dutters, but mostly because sometimes when... I mean, I would like to avoid smelling myself at some point. Yeah.
End of the day, end of a long day in the studio, you're like...
Yeah.
Well, that's just terrible.
Yeah.
I am right. The picking.
Yep.
So, William, how would you take incense?
I think I would like to see them as well, but I was thinking more like... You would see like a gas, and it would be a color.
So like a fart
would be like a yellow brown.
That way you could avoid hazardous materials.
See, I see that backfiring, because you like you're about to walk into a store and all you see is this gas. You're like I didn't need to know that. I'm never going anywhere.
You would see people farting all the time.
You will never.
Okay, yes, then that's definitely what I want.
The concept of silent but deadly would not exist for you.
But I could avoid it, you know?
True.
You could just look at
somebody.
You also
get to watch it dissipate. You know, like, everything would just get sort of a yellow haze in the whole
thing. The best would be, like, you like, see people get out of their car, like, in the ground, and the door opens, just this gaseous, just billows out of the car, and just like, oh, it's disgusting. Oh, it's so bad.
Yeah.
What's it called when you're like a crop duster?
Yeah.
Yeah, you just see a guy like looking like he's rocket powered.
You can see it coming towards you, and like.
This has gotten better since we started talking about it. That's
well, with that one, you got to go to the Big Bean aisle at Walmart, and they just. That way people get a real nice, you know, smell-o-vision kind of thing.
So if you can see smells, can you recognize the smell before it comes to you? Like the fart situation specifically. Somebody just left Taco Bell? You see them coming, you know that you're farting Taco Bell.
So you know that a fart is the color yellow, but maybe roses are, you know, a nice lavender.
Huh.
Or more so like a certain shade of green is a particular fast food joint.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, a nice light brown hue that tends to linger a little bit while it's definitely baked beans.
Now,
here comes that Chipotle green.
Are these fart clouds or mood rings? You describe
both,
it.
Both. Basically, you are being able to distinguish the mood of what someone's bowels are. So you're just walking around going, oh, that poor guy right there.
That guy's in a bad mood.
That guy's in a bad way.
I like to just turn from like seeing smells to just seeing farts.
Yes.
That's the only thing that smells from now
on. Basically, I know that life is no longer worth living when I cannot laugh at a good fart joke.
Right, which is why I would have the possibility of a great career as a comedian with this, but I wouldn't change. No, I'd keep my career.
Or a magician.
I brought it back.
Or a carbon monoxide.
You, ma'am. You, Taco Bell. You, Bojangles. You in the back are disgusting. Leave.
You, cookout.
All right, I think that's going to wrap it up for this episode. Brandon, will you do us the honor of the sign-off?
Now, is it that time travel sucks or that the next one will be better?
It could be either or. Time travel's a bitch.
Oh, yeah,
or the next one will be better.
Well, time travel's a bitch. We'll go back in time, so I said that correct the first time.
There you go.
But also the next one will be better.